Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. Thank you for joining today's episode. We're on a mission to share e-commerce logistics insights, trends, successes, and challenges from the leaders and innovators in our space.
My perspective is that the strong will survive, and one of the ways of being strong is actually getting an edge. And that edge right now, the only edge that they're going to be able to get, because if Thrasio has 20,000 SKUs to manage, they need data science.
Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. Ninad and I are really excited to welcome Chad Rubin, founder and CEO of Prophecy. It's absolutely appropriate to title Chad as a serial entrepreneur. In 2009, he launched an e-commerce vacuum parts business, Crucial Vacuum, which expanded to other appliance parts and was renamed Think Crucial. 13 plus years later, it's still a thriving business. Then, searching to solve his own problems, in 2014, he co-founds a company, as he best describes, what happens when an Amazon top 250 seller teams up with a former Fortune 50 software architect. Well, you get the launch of Skubana, which was acquired last year by 3PL Central. Chad's certainly not one to sit on the sideline, and he's back in the game with Prophecy, a dynamic pricing platform that enables Amazon brands to predict the perfect price for every product at each precise moment. Awesome tech and platform. Chad, great to have you and welcome today.
Thanks for having me. That is an awesome intro.
Well, you have an awesome background. It was easy, believe it or not. So we love your story. We love your journey. And super impressed with your background. We're absolutely chopping at the bit to get started talking shop. But first, want to kick off with your story and journey as a serial entrepreneur in the e-com space. And I'd love for you to bake in what you've been very open and transparent about with posts on LinkedIn and social media, which is this deep reset you needed after the Skubana acquisition and what I've read you call Chad 2.0. So would love to hear your story and journey and the evolution over the last several years.
Yeah. So I've been in the e-commerce game for like 12, 13, 13 years, 14 years, early Amazon seller. Also was part of the Prosper Show, started that with three other folks in the space. And so my goal really is to leave e-commerce better than when I found it, right? And be a catalyst for change. So, and I think I'm on the cutting edge and constantly doing that. So between creating the e-commerce company, finding problems to solve, which is like there was no private label sellers back then, there was no FBA back then, to then creating a community for sellers, to then creating a software that other people could leverage, that I was leveraging internally called Skubana. And now I've identified a really beautiful problem, which is difficult to solve. And I think that if anyone can solve it, it would be me, around dynamic pricing, sort of like Uber surge pricing for Amazon brands. So it's been a great journey. Part of what you mentioned around this great reset, as I call it, was around, you know, I've dedicated my life towards building and solving problems. And at some point, you have to actually dedicate your life to solving yourself in a way, right? There's a sort of like an emotional component to it. And I took a step back after the acquisition. We closed in April of 21. I was part of the transition, but I also decided to hire coaches and leave myself better than when I started during this period. And I'm still actually working with some of those coaches today, but that was a really special time for me to take a step back and really harvest and work on this Chad 2.0 and Chad 2.2 really. And Chad, you know, next year it'll be Chad 2.3. But yeah.
Love that. Love that. So, you know, it's such an interesting story, and you cover, I mean, you have so many different perspectives, right? You're a brand that's going out and was out in the market selling product, and you keep finding these problems that you don't see a solution in the market for, right? So you just say, hey, if I fix it for myself, then obviously there's probably more market opportunity and there's others that are having the same problems. So, you know, what's your process for that? I mean, I'm sure on a daily basis, you're coming up with a lot of different problems that need solved, but how do you get that aha moment that says, hey, this is something I think that the masses need addressed, and I've got the, you know, I've got the skill set to solve that.
Yeah. So I think it's twofold. One is on a macro level, it's finding friction in areas of your life where you're like hitting your foot or stubbing your toe against. And once you can remove that friction, you can really unlock what I call like nonlinear growth. Right? And how I came up with some of these problems was like actually experiencing them myself, whether it was like going direct consumer with the e-commerce business or the inventory order management piece with Stubana and now with pricing. Sure enough, when I left Stubana, I had a list. I had like a running list in Evernote of like every problem that I would document my day and be like, oh, hey, this is an interesting problem. And this is an interesting problem. And there's all these problems. And I'm like, why does life have to be this way? And I actually started pitching these problems to friends. So I went to like friends, I went to actually a few investors and I said, hey, like these are really interesting problems. Like, can you help me think through them and stack rank them and tell me why I'm crazy? And that is how I came across Prophecy, because my e-com company, I know you mentioned in my bio that it's thriving, and the real honest truth of it is actually it's struggling right now, right? It's thrived for a very long time. It's a very mature company, been on Amazon since 2007. And you think about the change that's happened on Amazon from 2008 to 2022, like that's a massive long time to have product on Amazon. And the world on Amazon has significantly changed, which I'm sure we'll get into in a second. But I was actually experiencing, how do I turn this business around? How do I make it more thriving? And so I pitched these investors like Prophecy, and I pitched them a real estate idea that I had, and I pitched them a different product idea that I had, and everything started coming back to Prophecy and pricing and Uber, like essentially the idea around algorithms and how algorithms haven't really, they're at the early stage of their life cycle, I believe, when it comes to SaaS and to Amazon specifically. And there's so many data points in Amazon to leverage. So this is how I really came across the idea around a dynamic algorithmic pricer on Amazon, where you're changing pricing throughout the day to optimize for profit.
That's really interesting, because, you know, you spoke about like working with coaches, and maybe if you can do a little bit of coaching for me, because here's where I struggle when I go through that product mindset, is there's an idea, I look at the market, of course there is someone always doing something similar, right? Like, so when you entered the multi-channel space on the inventory side, it wasn't like there weren't other players. We know some legacy players that have been around since the early 2000s, right? And then, you know, when you look at the pricing space, of course there is a lot of players that are within that. And 4 years ago, when I tried to think about a solution, and I was like, ah, there's players in the market. And what ends up being is, I look back at it, and there is all of these players that have actually evolved since, that have actually already been acquired, right? So like, if you look at the journey, like, how does a founder, right, think about it to say, yes, there is barriers to entry, no idea is completely refined. What's your journey of refining the solution to say, yes, it exists, but I'm going to make it even better?
So I think there's always room to be the best in whatever space that you're in. And specifically, as you mentioned, in the order management inventory space, I tried everything. And all of them were missing something, or they weren't written in a specific way that can handle my order volume, or you know, shipping wasn't a part of inventory when we first created Stubana, right? There was no software. There was ShipStation, right? But there was no shipping plus inventory solution that was all in one, that was easy to use and modern and purpose-built for these brands. So I think there's always room for better, right? Because like the shipping market is massive. The 3PL market is massive. The inventory market is massive. And so how can you actually iterate on something and do it better than whatever exists today? So that's like one, I think, framework to think about. Specifically, at Prophecy, and like the interesting thing about where I'm at today is that, you know, I've already have now three exits under my belt, right? And I'm onto my fourth company. So I have a lot of learnings and a framework of mistakes that I can navigate. And yet I'm still making mistakes. And every day I wake up and it's like another battle. And I'm battling through something right now, honestly. And at Prophecy, we just finished our first cohort of clients. And Prophecy worked for a handful of them, and Prophecy, we had neutral impact on a handful of them. And so how do we make our customers and deliver them more delight and happiness? And every single day that we get those reps in, we wake up smarter. We wake up, like you said, a better version of ourselves. If we look at ourselves like software, and I'm waking up today and I'm like, okay, these are the things I need to prioritize. These are the things I need to actually execute on. And this is the game plan and the roadmap to victory. So there's this whole book, Art of War by Lao Tzu. And he talks about just because you lose a battle, yes, doesn't mean you actually lose a war, right? Some battles actually you need to lose to get that rep in to actually earn the victory that you deserve.
Absolutely. Very true words spoken. And I, again, learning for me, I got to take that to heart and actually execute upon some of these things. I'm also being very transparent on that particular subject, on, you know, sticking to an idea and actually working towards refining it and taking it to greatness or being the best at whatever you are trying to achieve. Sorry, switching topics real quick, right? You mentioned you've been in 2007, 2008. So you are one of the original kind of Amazon sellers, right? Back in the days. You've seen lots of Amazon sellers come in the market, lots of stuff happening within the Amazon marketplace. You know, Dan and I worked in the past where, you know, a single seller is doing $300, $400 million worth of just purchasing, let alone the GMV on the other side from an annual basis, right? Has the ship on that front sailed when a new person's trying to look at entering as a seller? Or is there opportunity even today? And it's general curiosity because we don't play as deep within that particular space. So I just want to find your opinion on that. Like, to me, it just sounds like it's too crowded. The ship sailed. Is that accurate?
I think that there's a lot of room to make money. It's certainly not nearly as easy as it used to be, right? It's not just as simply as I can just create a product, find a niche, and rank organically. So I think that there's a very important thing that you need to consider nowadays that I would have never considered back in 2007, 2008. And so I think that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity to make, but I think you have to be really smart about it and you have to have an edge. You have to have a competitive advantage because you can't create the same Me Too product that everyone else has any longer, right? If you type in the word toilet, let's see, like toilet paper holder, right? There's like over 1,000 toilet paper holders on Amazon. Like, it's crazy. So I do think times have changed and sellers have needed to evolve to not just actually being better at building products that have a competitive advantage, but also now they need to become an advertiser. And then on top of that, I think and we alluded to earlier in the pre-notes of this conversation where we were just chatting, which is the idea of that algorithms are now moving into this market as the market has matured over time. And so there's a lot more that needs to happen to manage to win.
That's where I guess prophecy comes in from a pricing, right? Like it's all about the buy box and getting to it. And I guess, you know, pricing and the algorithms. And are the algorithms only playing a big part on the pricing side? Or is even a product listing, the naming, the description, the you know, do you have a you know, what emojis you put in your description? Like, I'm guessing the algorithms are helping with everything as far as selling is concerned now.
Yeah. So it just turns out that what an algorithm is simply is taking data and turning that into decisions and letting a system analyze these patterns to create the best and most optimal outcome that you can possibly achieve. So big companies that have massive budgets are already doing this, right? So, and it's not just, by the way, pricing. And I don't think that prophecy stops at pricing either, right? But pricing is our wedge into the market. So there's pricing, right? There's demand forecasting. There's advertising. There's niche finders, right? And there's already actually a company out there. It used to be called Tomahawk. I think they rebranded. I have their name somewhere in my phone. But essentially, there's significant players in this space who are leveraging AI and data science to meet the outcomes that they want to achieve, whether it's profit, whether it's inventory forecast, whether it's a better tacos. And this is all happening behind the scenes. And I'm really doing my best to make it front and center and for everyone to know that this is the competitive advantage going forward. Like, there's so much data on Amazon that's so rich to use that you can't actually, it's hard to survive as it is right now. It's going to get that much harder as algorithms start making decisions and start changing the marketplace.
And is that your observation just on Amazon as a marketplace, or are you seeing other marketplace channels or social channels? You know, I keep hearing about, like, you got to sell on TikTok, right? Like, that's the big thing. I'm still not on TikTok. I should be.
Yeah. But
is that the same logic that's applicable? Because even as these channels start from a certain position, they are taking a chapter out of Amazon's book. And of course, they are trying to evolve further as well, right? Like as marketplaces or social channels or social selling channels. What are you seeing out in the market? Like, yeah, you know, are algorithms kind of dominating over there as well?
Today, even Amazon, by the way, Amazon changes their price 2.5 million times a day. If you ever like added stuff into your cart on Amazon and you never took it out, and you'll see that the price changes over time, and Amazon tells you if it went up or went down, now the price changed. Amazon's, by the way, not the only person that's doing it. Expedia, right? Flights change based on the demand. Uber surge pricing. Airbnb has something called smart pricing. So everyone is using dynamic pricing to optimize every penny of profit. Now, the difference here is that prophecy is giving brands that same superpower. So how I would break this down to my mother, if I was talking to my mom right now, because my mom is like, you know, AI, like what's AI? I'm like, okay, mom, so let me just make it clear. Imagine you just started using Facebook and you've connected with me and my sister and our family, but you've never actually told Facebook what you like. You never dwelled on a video. You never poked me, or you never liked a comment or gave some feedback on a comment. So the more you give Facebook, the more Facebook knows what to deliver you, because their outcome that they want to achieve is you staying on the platform. They want you to dwell and to get dopamine from and like spend time on social media, right? And this is no different, right? So prophecy, we're taking clues, but not from a Facebook perspective. We're taking all the clues that Amazon gives you and all the cookie crumbs that Amazon gives you to pinpoint the optimal price with all the data that's available to improve profit contribution. And so, and this is, by the way, again, not just on price. This is, I'm not just talking about prophecy. I'm talking about in general, there is a massive amount of data to get on Amazon, right? And most brands aren't leveraging it. Who's leveraging it? Well, the aggregators, right? That's a great example, right? There's just too many data points for a human to take advantage of. And when you're operating at the same scale that Thrasio is or Heyday is, you can't actually run on the same old playbooks that everybody's been running on. You need to fail faster. You need to learn quicker. And to do that, to create that shorter feedback loop, right? To have all that data coming in, it's overwhelming for a human being to process it. So you use data science.
And Chad, you know, talking about those, you know, sticking on that subject, right? The aggregators. Is that the same thing as what we keep hearing in the market around Amazon brand consolidation, right? Like these aggregators are essentially going out and buying brands that are on Amazon. Is that what's happening in the space? And like, where is it all going? Because I hear there is literally, someone quoted like $20, $30 billion were spent just last year in some of these acquisitions.
Well, I think since the aggregator era started, I believe the number is about $15 billion has been raised.
Wow.
To deploy this capital into Amazon brands. And pre-COVID, even like in the early days, EBITDA multiples, like the multiplier that you'd apply and you'd buy these companies out of EBITDA were 2.6 or 2.7. And now that there's so many aggregators and everyone's doing the same thing, you're looking at high multiples. And when you combine the high multiples that they're buying these companies at with inflation, with the fact that the pandemic boost of digital spend has moved back somewhat into stores and normalized, you look at the bottlenecks of shipping and the supply chain logistics of containers, you look at the inflation of PPC spend on top of it, and you have this perfect storm that's occurred. So they're all not going to exist, right? There is going to be fallout. There already is a good amount of fallout that's happening. I think there's more fallout to happen. But my perspective is that the strong will survive. And one of the ways of being strong is actually getting an edge. And that edge right now, the only edge they're going to be able to get, because if Thrasio has 20,000 SKUs to manage, they need data science. The human brain just can't handle all the data points that are coming in. Even at 30 SKUs, you can't handle all the data points that Amazon gives you. So I think that that's going to essentially separate, right, the cream from the rest, is my viewpoint of using data science to win. And essentially the disintermediation of the traditional brand in a marketplace such as Amazon by the algorithm.
That's so cool. And as it plays out, you'd kind of see consolidators, picking up consolidators. It's like if a consolidator or a consolidation of brand or an aggregator was to fail, it's not like the brand goes away. What's probably going to happen is it's a distressed brand that just gets acquired by one of these other conglomerates. That just, and the way you are capable of doing that is to stay profitable, you know, show the value in what you are doing with your company, raise the capital necessary, and now buy these brands for cheaper, I guess, right? But it's going to be about data science is what I keep hearing, right? Like it's going to be about data science. That's what's going to make the difference.
I think it's that. And I also have yet to find an aggregator that's willing to buy turnaround Amazon companies. Like it's easy to buy a company when it's doing well on Amazon, but it's much harder to turn it around when it's not doing so well.
That's actually a beautiful kind of parallel that you drew, right? Like it just clicks in my mind because, you know, I do a little bit of trading and by no means am I a day trader. I'm more on the retail side. And then, yeah, you know, you are always competing against the big algorithms and you're just trying to, you know, get a little bit of scrap left over for yourself, right, in between. So that's phenomenal. The only difference being, I would say, is stock trader, you can have a computer, an algorithm, and a bunch of capital. In this one, you need a lot more infrastructure, inventory management, a lot that goes under the hood. Mm-hmm. But in principle, it stays the same.
Totally. Yeah. And you as you know, let's just say you buy and hold stocks, like you might say, I believe in the fundamentals of this specific company. Say it's Tesla. Right? I believe that this company has a lot more room to grow. You fundamentally you buy Tesla, right? You're maybe a customer of it and you like believe in the vision. And that is like investing in the fundamentals of a product, right? If a company actually has a competitive edge, right, they can actually win more shelf space and maybe they don't need to leverage or drive patterns in their data as much as perhaps others need to.
Makes sense. Talking, kind of switching gears towards the brand side of the business, brand in the sense, let's talk Shopify brands, right? Like if you were to look back just 5 years ago, the conversation on the market was, I'm Shopify, I'm a brand, I don't want brand dilution by going on Amazon, mm-hmm. right? And that was always, even a retailer, you had a LinkedIn post around like one of those bag manufacturers as an example where you had kind of pointed that out as well. Mm-hmm. And the story is changing now where you are seeing these brands finding Amazon as a channel, but there is a lot of holdout even today, right? Like where if I'm a successful Shopify brand, I might not go Amazon. What do you think is happening within that space? Are you seeing, because I always see the universe in those two kind of like splits, right? Like I'm Shopify, I'm kind of, or I call it Shopify, but I'm Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, wherever. I'm running my own brand store, my own marketing, my own Instagram, etc., which doesn't have as much influence to drive traffic towards Amazon, but it drives traffic towards, you know, their website. Mm-hmm. How do you see that kind of evolve from here? Right, there is a lot that's happening now. There is Buy with Prime on Shopify as an example.
Yeah, so I've been. It's funny that sometimes you see things early enough and other people don't pick up on it. So like for me, I've always been saying that these brands should be on, should embrace, essentially you want to be where your customer lives and where they sleep and where they shop and where they open their wallet. So I always thought of it as a massive opportunity. Because like part of Stubana, we supported multi-channel brands. So it was people who embraced Amazon as a channel, but it wasn't. They didn't start on Amazon and end on Amazon. They opened up into being everywhere they possibly can be, whether it's brick and mortar, whether it was selling a dropship vendor on Sephora, selling on Amazon. You need to. I always thought you need to be everywhere. So it's funny to see, you know, when I look at like D2C Twitter, now D2C brands have dropped the hubris and ego a bit, and now they're like, oh, like, we're now going to start doubling down on Amazon. And it's funny that I would tell these brands constantly, like, hey, you should be on Amazon. Now, I think that there's a right way and there's a wrong way to do this. So, and I can share with you like kind of a few different viewpoints on it. And I don't know how deep we want to get on it. But the first is people go on Amazon. A lot of times they never leave Amazon. So perhaps it's important you have your exclusives. Let's just say you're Caraway. You're selling pots and pans on Shopify and you have some really beautiful, elegant product. Well, put your hero SKU or your economy SKU on Amazon, because then you get social proof and you have your other color variations maybe off Amazon, right? So you're essentially dipping your toe in the water, but I'm not putting you in the deep end without any inflatables. You're just dipping your toe in, you're putting once you on, you're getting social proof. But also when people are advertising on your brand equity on Amazon, you're actually showing up and you're giving the customer what they want. That's just like one example. But the second problem that comes up, and I just want to share it, is like when you have the same product on Amazon and off Amazon, you run into a price parity issue. And this happened early on when Amazon was competing with Mark Lohr at diapers.com. There was a price war around diapers. And what Diapers' strategy was to change the pack sizes. They started changing and adjusting pack sizes. And that is actually still a strategy that could be leveraged right now. So to curate and change pack sizes and ounces and fluid ounces is a strategy where you can essentially have a different SKU and a different product or a different kit or assembly or variation on Amazon and have it different on Sephora and have it different on Shopify. And I think curating product selection across channels is something that I don't think enough retailers and brands give enough thought about, because they're just like, oh, I'm just going to start putting everything on Amazon, or I'm going to put everything on Target or Sephora. And then suddenly Amazon's suppressing your listing because your pricing is different, or they don't like what this price is on this platform relative to the price that you're sharing. Because essentially Amazon has a rule, you need to be the lowest price on their platform for a specific SKU. And that SKU is identified by a unified product code, a UPC code.
That's mind is equal to blown at this point, I got to say, because you know, I never thought about it from that perspective. I always thought like brown box versus, you know, my custom, you know, branded experience. And it's like, yeah, you need the brown box because you got to dabble into that a little bit, right? There is an opportunity, but try and like separate the product, right? Like, it's like almost like going to Costco versus, you know, going to a Kroger's, right? You get a different product. And there are times when you want to go to Costco. There are times when you want to go to Kroger's, or you might expose to a brand in Costco, but in Kroger's, you will get 7 flavors of it, right? So, and both those business models work very well.
Yeah, and I just want to share, like, as you talked about my LinkedIn post, it was highlighting Allbirds, which I'm a fan of their product. Or no, is it Allbirds? No, it was Away Luggage, sorry. And I'm a fan of their product too. But if you type in Away Luggage, they're not on Amazon and they're struggling, yet everyone's advertising on their brand term. And so if I was a consumer, I go to Amazon, I type in Away Luggage, I get a Samsonite bag, which probably looks almost near identical because they have no competitive moat or advantage or edge. I might start reading the reviews and be like, you know what, Samsonite's whatever, $100 cheaper and it's 10% lighter and it'll do the job. And there you go. That's how a company loses market share over time. When you have a monopoly, like Amazon is doing over 50% of market share of e-commerce revenue. You just can't ignore it. And a lot of these brands ignore it. And it's not actually a driven by data decision. And they're not achieving their fair share of monetization of their brand when they decide to make that decision.
Makes sense. Makes complete sense.
It does. And maybe we'll flip right now and talk about when the buy button is won and product is purchased. Would love your perspective, Chad, you know, because you sit, you know, on the tech side, you sit on the brand side and have conversations with a lot of brands in the market. You know, Amazon just came out and announced AWD, Amazon Warehouse and Distribution, which we all knew was coming at some point. And that's Amazon's version of being a 3PL outside of the Amazon marketplace. So a brand could now partner with Amazon to do the Amazon fulfillment and shipment of orders, but could also use Amazon to fulfill orders that are placed in other sales channels, maybe on their own .com or other marketplaces. So obviously that's going to have some sort of impact kind of in the e-commerce fulfillment 3PL space. Would love to hear your perspective on, you know, do you think that's, I think the announcement, which just happened a couple months ago, is kind of like the MVP and it was the teaser. And we heard, you know, more to come, more details to be rolled out in 2023. But from a brand standpoint, how do you see them? Because really, with everything we're talking about too, and maybe this goes back to the early days where brands were really sensitive about Amazon having data, like it was all control about data and information. So if a brand is now partnering with Amazon, solid sales channel, and is now exposing Amazon and giving them the details of all the activity that's going on with that brand and those SKUs and all the different sales channels, how do you think brands are going to, are they going to embrace this? Or are they going to be cautious of it? Would just love your thoughts there.
Yeah. So a few things. I think I never understood the logic of like a brand saying, I don't want Amazon to have my data, right? Because first of all, Amazon already has a tremendous amount of search volume queries. They already know what people are searching. They know where there's opportunities that are not being, where supply is not meeting demand. So I never quite understood the logic, right? It was just sort of like, we're anti-Amazon. We want our own platform. We'll never embrace Amazon. And you'll see that that's now shifting. Even, by the way, in the Great Recession, 2009, Amazon actually did much better than the market. It was a great place to park your cash. So Amazon became recession-proof, at least in the early days when I saw how that stock reacted in the recession. There was a flight to the lowest, the cheapest, and the best service, and you can't beat Amazon, right? And if you can't beat Amazon, you got to join Amazon. Now, if we look at the genesis of Amazon creating their own 3PL, right? You look at multi-channel fulfillment (MCF), and the problem with MCF that I think why there wasn't broad adoption, MCF for those that are listening, was essentially if you have stock at FBA, you can use that stock and sell it off Amazon and you can MCF it, right? There's a tax of going off platform. Amazon would tax you. And now Amazon's saying, well, we don't want to tax you. We want to embrace that. We have so much infrastructure that we've created. We want to essentially capitalize on the infrastructure that we've created and let you use it. The same thing they did with AWS, the same thing they did with the marketplace, the same thing they did even with Amazon advertising, right? They're just leveraging and cheating what their mama gave them. It's a wonderful move. It comes down to the pricing structure, right? And what the pricing is, but it's Amazon essentially getting more and more share of business and using the data that they've already accumulated in the past 20 something years of in business to just double down on it. So MCF to me failed because they taxed companies and it was like actually like the pricing model didn't necessarily work. I think that if they were to change the pricing model, like this could be a massive advantage. Now, the big thing, and you guys know this in the supply chain logistics space, is that 3PLs can get sort of complicated, especially if you're multi-channel. And I think that Shopify is experiencing this with the Deliverr acquisition right now, where like it's not just about pick and pack, right? And there's like the B2B side of the business. There's FBA prep that needs to happen. There's, you know, and you can do pick and pack for B2B, which requires specific labels for a big box store. But for a boutique store, it's a different kind of packaging that's required and different slips that go into the box. And so it actually gets complicated. So I think that Amazon has a lot of work cut out to figure out how they're going to support different profile of D2C brands, which means to me, at least, that there's still going to be a lot of room available for smaller or regional or fractional or these 3PLs that are different sizes to accommodate the kind of different profiles that exist today. So I don't think it's going to be, it's not necessarily winner takes all, in my opinion, just because Amazon's launching a 3PL.
Agreed. And I, just talking about the MCF, you called it MCF model, yeah. Back in the days, I remember at one point, I think it was a short point where you could ship a Walmart.com order off the Amazon warehouse. So you would place an order on Walmart and you would get an Amazon box coming to your house. And Walmart was pretty quick at shutting that down. Be like, you cannot ship from Amazon if you are actually placing an order on Amazon or you are a merchant on Walmart.com.
And it's harder to manage, by the way, right? Like at scale, like Walmart's not necessarily opening up every box. And I think Amazon now offers a option for a brown box with no Amazon branding.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And you know, talking about AWD, right? I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be an end all whatsoever for like, oh, Amazon's doing this. That means the entire volume for the 3PL market is going to be consumed by them. I think there's going to be certain brands and retailers where it will make a lot of sense, right? So what's happening right now in the industry, and we see this multi-warehouse strategy. You work with a traditional 3PL out in the market, and You do all your multi-channel fulfillment for everywhere else that you sell, Shopify, et cetera, from your 3PL. But then you also have this entire FBA process to prep and send everything into FBA that's prim and proper. Now, if you have 60, 70% of your volume actually ending up in Amazon, then this might be a great solution for you because you also use those solutions for overflow. Keeping products in FBA is expensive. We haven't seen the pricing around AWD, but if it comes out and the segment that they go after is comparable to the market, there's going to be a segment of the market where it's just going to make a lot of sense, right? Like if you're bringing all of these products and you're storing it just because you got it cheap, but Amazon FBA is not giving you the capacity to store it all, you need another 3PL. And that ends up being AWD at that point, right? And there is more than enough volume. And we know the infrastructure challenges with, if Amazon was to consume that, the amount of infrastructure that they are going to have to develop, right? Because they can go all over the place. Hmm. And to the point that you make around B2B, such a valid point, right? Of course, in Skubana, you've probably seen all of those channels and all the pack slips and EDI compliance and labeling and GS1 and everything that goes into it. I don't think Amazon's going to touch that.
Yeah, and furniture, perishables, like, you know, CPG, right? Co-packers. There's definitely complex workflows that Amazon can't touch. But to your point, if you already have your product sitting at a public warehouse and 70 or 80% of your SKUs are at FBA, right, sitting in an Amazon distribution center, it may make sense to just consolidate that if the economics made sense. Now, one of the challenges, right, that I think about as I think through this is that, so now suddenly Amazon is now getting, let's just say this new 3PL that they're creating increases their shipping velocity 30%, right, over time, or 40%. Well, my house in Miami only gets delivery from Amazon, an Amazon truck right now. So I think to myself, wow, like what percentage of shipping, right, dollars going into shipping is Amazon going to be getting? And you know, they're probably going to monetize their own shipping carrier at this point and do away completely with FedEx and UPS. And that creates a big challenge for any other carrier to succeed.
Yeah. I think we could probably do an entire podcast on that subject, my friend. It's definitely, you know, we heard a lot, like it's complex. Building a courier network is complex and Amazon's done it very successfully. And if you take and listen to what they have done in the past and see what they have done in the past, it's natural. I think it's going to be Amazon Logistics being available to retailers to do where you have not even sold on Amazon just because they have the infrastructure. Because this is one of the most critical aspects is volume, right? Like the more volume you have, the more successful you are. I mean, Amazon as a business is also successful is because they have the volume, right? And in the courier and transportation network, that's exactly what it comes down to. If you have the volume, which they do, and now you bring in additional volume from, you know, out in the market, I think it could become a pretty major threat to a lot of people, right, out in the market. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out.
Yeah.
Well, one other subject that I wanted to kind of touch on, and you touched on it a little bit, was the Shopify Deliver acquisition, right, and what they are trying to do. Do you have any opinions on, you know, brands from a Shopify perspective on the logistics side, right? Like if they have half and half split between FBA and Shopify, what should they be doing, right? Like how are you seeing the market kind of evolve within that space?
Yeah, so as what I understand about Deliver is that they actually never own the underlying asset of the warehouse.
Correct. Right?
So they would essentially install and they sat on a WMS on top, a warehouse management system on top of the warehouse. So it's a warehouse that they don't own or a 3PL that they're using. There's a white labeled WMS system. And then there's an overlay that sort of allows them to execute a 4PL strategy, which is essentially taking nodes of different 3PLs that never communicated with each other and put it all together. I guess I have an issue around, like my business is super complex where I have complex workflows where like Deliver could have never delivered for me specifically what I needed and what I promised to customers and just the workflows of my own business. I don't understand I don't know exactly what Shopify was thinking with this specific move. But at a high level, I see convergence, right, of Shopify has been saying that they're not competing with Amazon for a long time. And Amazon's been saying that they're not competing with Shopify. But in fact, we know that they are competing with each other. And as Amazon is building out infrastructure, I think Shopify wanted to get more, I would say, they needed to add on more, bolt on more services to be more competitive. And so they acquired Deliver. Problem is that like running a software company is very different than running a human-driven pick and pack entity. And I don't, at least if you listen to the earning calls, it doesn't sound like the acquisition is going as smooth as maybe the leadership team would have expected, but like that happens with all acquisitions, right? So it's not secular to just Shopify specifically. So I don't know, I guess going back to your specific question is like the Shopify Deliver acquisition, I think brands are getting more complicated and more complex, and 4PLs are very good at doing one thing really well, typically, which is, hey, pick this, pack this, and ship it. You know, not talking about EDI, not talking about big buy. Like, there's a whole lot more complications, and I haven't seen it work for complicated workflows just yet. That doesn't mean it can't, but at least now you have Amazon and Shopify are, well, I wouldn't say they're at parity, but I think if I had to bet on a horse, I would say it's probably Amazon because they already have the infrastructure. They built their complete company around pick and pack and shipping and delivering and delighting customers. And Shopify is 15 years behind.
Unique perspective, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Chad, thank you for this amazing conversation. A lot of amazing insight and past experience and what's coming down the road from you. So really appreciate that. And would love you to give you the opportunity to share with our audience the best way to follow you and where they could learn more about Prophecy.
Cool. Yeah. So my LinkedIn, I'm posting on LinkedIn pretty frequently these days. So you can follow me on LinkedIn and connect with me. You can direct message me. My personal email is chad@prophecy. That's PROFASEE, profityoucouldsee.com. You can email me there. You can go to prophecy.com, check out what we're doing. We're doing some amazing stuff around leveraging AI that nobody is doing. We're first to market. I'm super excited to be sharing it with the world.
Awesome. Thank you, Chad.
Thank you, Chad.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to maximize your supply chain. Available on all major podcasting channels. Thank you for listening and see you in the next episode.